Hello, Soul Family, and welcome to the Soul Goddess Podcast. My name is Aishwarya. I am a mystic, healer, coach, and music artist. We are walking into a pivotal golden age on Earth, and it's time to cultivate the art and science of elevating your consciousness to extraordinary levels. Imagine having the most profound relationships, tapping into your divine guidance, embracing your true soul design, and unlocking supernatural abundance through your innate gifts. Those are the conversations we will be having twice a week, every Wednesday and Thursday, and we will have episodes that will nourish your spirit and expand your horizons. Don't forget to subscribe and become a part of our ever-growing soul family, and expect to meet incredible guests who will bring their unique wisdom and experiences to the table. And on other episodes, it will just be me and you. Remember, you're more than a listener to me. You are family. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Soul Goddess Podcast. Today, I have a really special guest, Rosanna Gill. Rosanna is a breathwork facilitator and clinical hypnotherapist dedicated to empowering individuals and organizations. Her own experiences, past trauma, and intuition shape her approach to breathwork and hypnotherapy. Rosanna grew up in an image-conscious household, grappling with a family member's mental health struggles. And at 19, a sudden diagnosis ignited 2 decades of shame and unworthiness. She unknowingly lived in a persistent state of hypervigilance through her late 20s and 30s as she climbed the corporate ladder while struggling to heal the pain and patterns caused by past trauma. Discovering guided breathwork provided a path to profound insights, body-mind connections, and personal discovery and transformation. Rosanna, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
It's so good to have you. And today we are talking about healing from the body up, discussing how trauma is stored in our bodies, the ways that it really impacts our lives on a daily basis, and ways to get out of your mind and into your body to process and release emotions. So I know that the audience tuned in are going to benefit so much from that. But do you mind just telling everybody a little bit about your journey and why and how you got here? And just, you know, even in your bio, you say that a sudden diagnosis ignited 2 decades of shame and unworthiness. So we would just, love to hear a little bit about your story.
Okay, well, thank you. So as far as the diagnosis, I think to understand why that caused so much unrest in me unconsciously and in my striving efforts, have to back up to growing up. Like I mentioned in the bio, you know, I had a family member, specifically a parent, dealing with mental illness, and I'm an only child. There really wasn't somebody else to rely on in that sense, as far as like support. So I sort of became the emotional support for one parent, and then also was very hypervigilant about the emotional ups and downs of the parent that was dealing with the mental illness. Mm-hmm. And it really, for me, for everybody, it manifests differently. For me, I didn't act out. I didn't, you know, addiction is very common, substance abuse sometimes for children of somebody dealing with mental illness, because very early on you learn or you interpret that your own emotions have to take the back seat to somebody else's. Mm-hmm. And often in those situations, if you have somebody who, you know, not of any fault of their own, can't regulate their own emotions, that their emotions are, you know, are so up and down, it kind of causes everybody else to walk on eggshells. Mm-hmm. And for me, I learned if I could just be good enough, if I could be a good girl, if I could do everything I'm supposed to, if I can be the perfectly behaved child, then I will get at least some of the attention that I desperately want. Mm-hmm. I just wanted that love. I wanted to feel safe. And for me, that manifested as, like I said, being the good girl. You know, how can I not need or not take away from anyone else, but just show up as perfectly as possible to get that, Rosanna, you're so good. Rosanna, you're doing so much. And I was very much what I think kids would call goody two shoes. You know, I think I probably annoyed a lot of other kids, but I wanted so desperately for my teachers to love me. I just wanted everybody to love me. So I very much had this identity of, I do everything right. And then that is what allows me to feel safe. That is what allows me to feel valued and worthy. So then fast forward to 19, and I am in my first serious relationship, and I am diagnosed with herpes. And it was something that, quite frankly, from the way I was raised in a very, very devout conservative Christian household, and even in my beliefs about what a good girl was, it was the antithesis of all of that. So now all of a sudden, and what was crazy also in the way that it happened, I was still a virgin in the sense that I had not had intercourse. And I did not know, I was very ignorant and very naive, that that could happen if you didn't have what I considered going all the way. So I had in this moment gone from being the epitome of a good girl to being what I considered, very honestly, a dirty girl. And being the statistic of my friends, even though I was still the one that was technically a virgin. And so for me, it was this, well, if I am not a good girl, if I have this thing that I quite frankly felt was very deserving of shame, and I thought made me worthy of only shame, who am I now? And in professional world, it just manifested in me just trying that much harder to be perfect. What do I have to do to be good enough? How do I compensate for this thing that now I can't change? It is always going to be a diagnosis that I am going to be honest about and have to disclose. And I don't have to, obviously I didn't have to talk about that in my professional life and in other areas of my life, but it still was this driving of, now I'm bad. Now I'm not worthy. So it really just propelled that seeking of value, seeking of worth outside of me that much more. And for me, the whole journey and the whole healing journey has really come to one acceptance of that and seeing when I am seeking outside of myself to be defined as good enough, worthy enough, as lovable, and coming back to home and realizing that every time it has to come back to me connecting with myself, to me finding what makes me worthy outside of these external circumstances. And in what ways, even in daily life, am I overexerting or allowing my worth? Am I giving somebody the power outside of me to define that?
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that, because I just love when people are really honest about their stories, because it just allows everybody to bring their vulnerability and what they feel maybe they've dealt with shame around that to the table. So that's just super powerful. So in that moment, did you kind of like turn the blame on yourself? Did you turn it on a higher power? Did you turn it like, was this kind of a moment of like, why has this happened to me? And how did you start? Was it like you just didn't deal with it for a while? Or how did you start the healing process with all of that?
Oh, that's such a good question. So my relationship with God at that point, I had, I don't mean to say I don't still, but on a pedestal. And to me, it was like, okay, well, you did something you weren't supposed to, so now you're being punished. So for me, it was just my view of God was a very, you know, loving, but also a very authoritative, punishing figure. So it was sort of like, well, you did the one time you did something you weren't supposed to do, look what happened. And it was a very, I would say, critical, very, very self-critical view of myself. It's interesting. And this is why in a lot of my content, I always talk about how like guilt and shame is not a long lasting, sustainable way to create behavior change. Because while we think we can shame ourselves into being better, all you end up doing is perpetrating that same cycle over and over and over again, because you just never feel enough. So for me, to answer your question, it was very, very self-judgment, just self-judgmental, very self-critical. I didn't blame my significant other. I didn't blame God. It was just, well, I deserve this. This is what happens to girls who are like this. Now, what's interesting though, and what I'm so very grateful of, is it did resist, or it did reduce how much I judged others. So even though I put all that blame on myself, I from that point forward had such a deeper empathy for other people. Because for me, it was like, well, if this can happen to me, and I have never slept with anyone, I don't have multiple partners, all these things that I assumed meant you deserved that, then all of a sudden it's like, well, I can't judge somebody else because look what my situation is. Like, if I have this, if I am this statistic, then I cannot judge anybody else. So on the one hand, I'm very grateful that I just put it on myself and not other people. And I'm very grateful that I was able to have, like I said, a deeper empathy for other people, much more so than I did before. But I also can look and see the other side of that coin was that I was that much more harsh on myself.
And I think this is a really important conversation just in terms of sexuality and how much people actually struggle with shame around that. Like, I know I definitely did, just because of my heritage and my background, that you just don't do it before marriage. And it was like, but what if you don't want to get married young and you're still a woman? And it was like, you know, in many ways, I struggled with just guilt for just having, just for being a woman and wanting to be close to somebody. And it was only until a certain point when I realized, okay, actually, and it's very recent actually, that I was like, okay, take yourself off the hook. But for the majority of time, I just felt, I never enjoyed it. I just felt so much guilt and I was just so much shame. And it was like this split, that there was this split in myself. So I think, you know, since we are talking about things that get stored in our bodies and releasing emotions, I think sexuality is just such, when we just approach that subject, just shame and guilt just gets tied to that so much. Especially, and people, and most of the time it can like manifest in two types of behavior, like a really judgmental, really restrictive behavior, or like a really overt kind of like, I don't want to face the shame, I don't want to face the guilt. And obviously both, the balanced perspective is obviously the healthier perspective, but yeah, that's I think that's what I witness in people.
1,000%. And it seems so obvious, right? Of course, have a balanced perspective, but it's very difficult when you're working through years of family, societal, cultural conditioning, and to find what is your true north. And for me, I defaulted to what are the rules that I have been given within my religion to define my worthiness. And for me, it was like, okay, I cannot do these things because in the purview of, you know, my view of God and Christianity, then I'm bad if I don't. And what's been really interesting is, say, like you said, taking myself off the hook and not going by what do rules say, but how do I want to feel? How do I want to show up in relationships? How do I want to feel when I share myself with someone? And I always thought that unless I looked at my value through the perspective of, again, good or bad in terms of my faith, that I would just be a horrible, horrible person. But what's interesting is when I just looked at, what do I want in a relationship? How do I want to feel about myself and my sexuality? I didn't have a desire. Once I got to that point, I didn't have this desire to go sleep with a bunch of people. If anything, it's complete opposite. It's like, no, I love myself so much and I know what I want, that I don't need anybody else, any external voice saying, this is what you have to do. I know what's right for me. And I know how I want to feel in a relationship. And I know like what I expect of an intimate relationship. And it is, I would say, I actually think because it's something coming from me, it is a much higher standard than what I had before. It's so much more than just checking boxes.
So how did you start working through that shame and that guilt? And, you know, because I'm guessing that you weren't doing as much of the healing stuff that you are now at the age of 19. So how did you... How did you work through that?
I would say I sort of put it on a back burner, you know, and I didn't realize it at the time. First stage was, how do I feel validated as worthy by somebody else's perspective? So it was, you know, dating people who maybe weren't good choices, but still were willing to date me, even though I had this shameful, in my mind, diagnosis, which again, if you're coming from that perspective, you're not making the best choices. I was in some very toxic relationships and stayed in them because I had so much shame. And it was like, well, but this person is willing to be with me, so I must need to put up with this. Mm-hmm. And slowly getting to a point where I stopped depending so much on external sources of validation. And what really, for me, was understanding the evolution of how I defined or where I got my confidence from. And I would listen to so many books about be confident, believe in yourself, and you just have to, and I would try so hard. I'm like, what is missing? Like, I can cognitively know I am worthy, I am valuable, and all that stuff. And I can say all these affirmations, but I'm still not making choices that align with those affirmations. So where is the disconnect? And it honestly was not until I was being guided through a breathwork session where I kind of got out of my head into my body, where I realized, oh, like, I can't ask somebody else to validate me. Like, it has to come from internal. And I felt this, I was overwhelmed by this deep sense of love for myself and this feeling of I am worthy. And it was something that I had never gotten just simply from journaling or simply from working on it at a cognitive level. It was this moment of, oh my gosh, this is what self-love really feels like. And it can't be faked. And it can't be forced. It's just this connection with myself that I felt like, oh, I finally get it. And also in that moment, understanding and seeing so clearly all the ways that I hadn't felt it authentically, that I hadn't really embodied self-love. Mm. And from that point forward, it really became okay, now that I've seen this, now that I've felt this, how do we keep going deeper? What else am I allowing to hold myself back from truly feeling these things that I've been trying to feel and trying to get for so many years? And at that point, I think I was, 32, 33? So we've got a good 14 years from diagnosis to genuine feeling of unconditional self-love.
And I also love that you shared, you know, that you kind of got into toxic relationships because you thought, okay, at least this person is willing to, you know, just deal with how you felt about yourself at the time. And I hear so many powerful women, singers, actresses, models, like people you would just never think that they would feel like that. They feel like that. And it might not be a diagnosis. It's just the way they see themselves. Everything on the external could look like an Instagram filter. But inside, if you haven't healed that, you will just keep attracting these situations, these partners, these relationships. And that's why, like, a lot of the times, you know, you see those amazing women with certain, not even women, it could be men, it could be non-binary, whatever, like with partners, and you just think, why did that person choose that person? It just doesn't make sense looking from the outside, but mm-hmm. it's all going on within. And, you know, and the next thing that you mentioned, which I want to like say something about, is just the whole, all this content. And I'm glad it's changing and it's coming more to like inner work and like the feminine path and stuff. Because before that, it was like, just believe in yourself, just go for it, just do it. You need it, like you need air and all this. And it was like, I remember also trying and like listening to all that stuff. And I was thinking, why is this not working? Because it's just so forceful. And, you know, you're not looking at any of the shadow work. You're not looking at any of the stuff that's going on within. You're just literally forcing and bulldozing yourself to get to the other side. And that was kind of like the traditional form of self-improvement before we've evolved into this. And it just doesn't work. Like, I don't even think some people are like, oh yeah, it's more of a like a masculine way of doing things. I don't even think it works for anyone personally. Like, I think that, again, there needs to be a balance. So it's just, yeah. It's just really interesting that you mentioned those things. And then obviously you went on to doing your breath work and discovering all of this stuff. But yeah, so I just wanted to also ask you, like, what kind, so some people just know straight off that they have unhealed trauma. They just know, like, you know, I'm choosing toxic relationships. I'm feeling guilt. I'm feeling shame. Like, there's a lot of things going on in my body. I might have autoimmune disorders, like whatever it is. But there are some patterns that people don't actually realize are tied to unhealed trauma. So could you tell us a few of those?
I hope that you are loving this episode, and I wanted to just take a quick minute to give you something super exciting, a free ticket to the 25-day Finally Feel Free virtual retreat. This is not an ordinary event, it is a sacred global sanctuary designed to support, elevate, and celebrate your unique journey. Me and over 50 visionary speakers will be diving into the realms of quantum health and wellness, unlocking wealth through your natural gifts, exploring a new form of divine love, and elevating to higher states of consciousness to create and experience your soul destiny. Don't miss this beautiful opportunity. Sign up. The link is in the show notes below. And now back to our episode.
Oh, I'm so glad you talked about this, because what's interesting to me is I got really into understanding trauma and reading about it long before I understood what I experienced as trauma. And I think I'm not that different from a lot of people in the sense that I had very specific things that I said were traumatic. You know, I thought childhood sexual abuse, traumatic, war, traumatic. Like, there were these big T traumas, right? That I was like, well, I didn't experience that. So what I went through wasn't traumatic. And here's the thing that I didn't understand. Even though something is what you were accustomed to and you survived it, doesn't make it less traumatic. So for me, I did not know that having a parent or a caregiver who was dealing with mental illness could be considered traumatic until I read it. And even then I thought, but I'm okay. Like, I'm okay. And I think that's what a lot of people think. Well, I'm okay, so it must not have been actual trauma and it must not be real. But here's where it came is I also, because of the patterns I developed from that experience, always always made I had to overgive. It was excessive people pleaser to the extent of I have to take on more than I can possibly do because I'm always trying to make up for it. I'm always trying to be the good girl, the good employee, the good girlfriend, the good friend, to the point where it was like, I'm so emotionally drained and I'm so burnt out, but I still feel like I have to feel bad if I'm not giving and saying yes to somebody else. That's a very, very common one that I see, especially in clients where it's like, but I feel better by giving to others. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. But if it's at the risk of your own health and the detriment of your own mental health, then we need to talk about what are you trying to prove in saying yes to so much? The other thing is a lot of overworking. For me, for years, my life revolved around working and working out. Working out because I was always trying to lose weight, because I was always chasing this image of what a pretty woman or a worthy woman look like. And it was always going to be smaller than what I actually was. And when you are so busy doing that, you somehow conveniently never have time to just be and not be distracted, then you are probably operating out of some sort of a pattern, a lot of times related to trauma, that says you have to do. Who you are, who you be is not enough. If you are not constantly doing and fixing yourself and others, then you are not worthy as you are. And so those are the most common ones I see and the ones that I really experienced a lot. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, I'm just taking it in because, you know, I'm just thinking of the workaholic people. And you might not identify yourself as workaholic if you're listening to this, because I know a lot of people are like, no, I'm not a workaholic. I'm just really busy, or I'm just really doing, you know, I've got so much to do. And it's just, I can't imagine operating like that, because, you know, I've I just genuinely can't. I don't think I have that much energy. Like, I think my body will just be like, no. But it's so interesting because what I witness in people who operate like that, and it's not their fault at all, obviously we've discussed why, is that they actually become more successful when they stop that kind of pattern and become more balanced. Because this world will tell you, this society, this matrix, whatever you want to call it, keep working hard, you'll get there, you know, you'll get your goals, you'll become that person. But with like clients, friends, people I've seen, it's like they'll be working so hard, but it feels like their goals are just becoming, going further and further away. Whereas somebody else will be, who's a bit more balanced in how they approach life, will just get things easier. And it's just you, people don't think that that's what happens.
Well, I think it's so interesting when you come from your perspective, or even mine now, where it's so easy to see somebody else, where it's like, I think of all the companies and the businesses that have been built out of a wound. Mm. And so many, I saw it a lot in my previous career where it was very male dominated. And how many of these men who operated out of this go harder, grind harder, hustle harder. And I've always had this personality where people open up very easily. How many of them, when I would actually talk with them and they would open up in a way that they felt safe, how many of them were trying in some way, on some level, to prove themselves to someone in their life? They were doing all of these things and grinding and hustling, but so often, maybe they didn't have a father who acknowledged them or was available physically or emotionally. Maybe they had a very tough relationship with a mother. And you then see that these businesses, while they are being built, but they are being built from a wound. And I just want to sometimes lovingly hug them and say, I still see that little child in you that just wants to be acknowledged by someone. And you can grind and you can hustle and you can get every accomplishment. You can be the best in your field. But until you address that wound, until you actually come face to face and can say, I love myself, regardless of anything that I have done, and I love myself in the way that I wish this person had loved me, it's never going to feel enough. It's never going to be enough. None of what is accomplished outside of you can ever, ever compare to the love, like being able to unconditionally love yourself regardless of anything else.
Yeah, and it's just another thing I'm just thinking of is just when it comes to relationships, you know, and how triggering relationships can be to somebody who's operating like that, because the minute they feel like they're falling short in their relationship, or someone's criticizing them, even somebody could be saying something innocent, but it still reminds them of like, okay, no, this reminds me of what my dad said or what my mom said, and nothing I ever do is ever enough. Like, I'm working all these hours and da da da, and they could be working all those hours, but when it comes to I just find that relationships is the most triggering thing for them. Because they're experiencing that feeling of like, everything I do is never enough.
I love that you said that, because I literally was listening to a podcast the other day that was very much like this. And it's what we don't realize is we're saying it's never enough, thinking that we're saying for them, but really the end of that sentence is, it's never enough for me to love myself. It's not about the other person. That person is merely a reflection of what you believe. And what you are saying every single time you're saying, oh, no matter what I do, it's never enough. It really is. It's never enough because I won't let it be enough.
Yeah, it just reminds me of somebody that I dated one time who was like a super workaholic. And I found myself being very like, different. And I was thinking, why am I being like this? And I realized it's like, you know, because of the trauma that we carry, we can actually pull out different energies in other people because they're going to mirror back to us. And, you know, that's why I can see with different people in my life, sometimes I'm like, why do I like fall into that with that person? And then I can catch myself and do that inner work. But if you're not used to doing that, you'll just go around like, you know, people pull different things out of different people. And that one person who I considered to be a workaholic, it was like there was like a scarcity of time. And that put me into like, you know, there's a scarcity of time. Obviously, that was my stuff as well, being mirrored by that person. But, and it literally was, and I could feel that that person felt anything they do is never enough. And that's why I had to bring it up, because it just put me back into that memory. And now you're presenting it from that kind of angle, which I would have never seen, because I don't think I've ever been a workaholic. I've been other things, but I haven't been a workaholic. So it's so interesting to just let that land. Wow.
I'm so curious, when you did that reflection on yourself and like, okay, I'm feeling something that I know is not of me, right? It doesn't feel of me. I'm not a workaholic. Where did that take you? Like, what did you see in that process of reflection in what they were doing, or that energy they were bringing to the relationship?
I saw, it's interesting because my parents are workaholics. I would consider them workaholics. And my thing was, why am I not, like, obviously, you know, immigrant parents, Indian parents working super hard, have to, no choice, right? I'm around a bunch of other British people. Their parents are settled. Their parents are not working like that. Mine are. So I'm thinking, why is I go to people's houses and their mom's got time to spend with them, their dad's got time to spend with them. And I'm thinking, why don't my parents spend time with me? I go home, my parents are stressed. My parents, like, they have done well for themselves to this day, luckily. But at that time, it was, you know, there was no choice. And that to me registered, whatever I do, it's not good enough for you to spend time with me. So the mirror was genuinely, why are you choosing work over me? Like, why are you choosing work over me? Like, you... So that was my thing. And then that mirror, what I was mirroring to him is, whatever you do, it's not good enough for me. And I would find myself as well, which was really interesting, because this was interesting to me, because I was thinking, why am I doing this? I would keep raising the bar to be like, okay, you've done this now, but now we need to get to this level, and now we need to get this to this level. And that was putting me very much in my masculine energy, because normally I'm not like that. I wasn't like that. I was just like, you know, when things are kind of unfolding, you just sit back, you enjoy it. But I found myself raising that bar. So I could see that whatever he did do, it just wasn't enough. And I was reflecting that back to him. I was genuinely like doing that. And I was thinking, why did that get pulled out?
That is what I love about this work. Oh my gosh. Like, it's so interesting, because as you're saying it, for me, it's like, oh, of course, this is how you felt with your parents and in this relationship. But it's when we're in it, you know, it's so hard to take that step back. And that's why I wanted to know, like, where that went for you, just so people listening to this can understand, like, that's what it takes. It's being willing. You could have very easily made him the bad guy. You could have very easily said, this is a you issue. But instead you said, okay, what is this bringing up in me? And then have this beautiful revelation and identification of a pattern. And I just think, isn't that life? Like, it's, we all want, right, our relationships to be these beautiful kumbaya things. And it's like, oh, you know, you are my twin flame and we complete each other and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, but here's the thing. If you are honestly in a relationship built on growth, built on awareness, and each of you doing your own work individually and together, that means you are going to have some really icky stuff reflected to you on a regular basis. And instead of being upset with it, we just have to lean in and say, that is the beauty of this relationship.
But most people don't I think both people have to be willing to look at themselves in that way and look at each other as like not the enemy and like working through it together, because otherwise it's just so overwhelming. Do you know what it is, Rosanna, as well? Like, it's so overwhelming to be with somebody who's so dedicated to inner work like you or like me, because you can never, like, there's nowhere to hide. Like, nothing gets dismissed. Nothing gets pushed under the carpet. Like, it is just the depth of it is, we're going to talk about this. We're going to do this. We're going to move forward in, like, we're going to evolve. And that can be really intimidating to somebody who is not familiar with looking at the truth of themselves and not, like, familiar with doing that level of inner work. So I think it does take, yeah, like, it takes either you to kind of be that person, and but you have to be, I think you have to be with another person who is willing to look at themselves like that.
1000%. And here's the thing, it's also difficult, not difficult, but it's interesting now dating, because I was talking about this with a friend, because there was somebody that I was dating and I liked them a lot, and I could see this beautiful side of them, but I also knew very quickly that they just, maybe at some point, but right now, are not interested in doing the work, are not interested in having that level of self-awareness, and not being judgmental of it, but just saying, I know this isn't going to work right now. Maybe at some point, if they wanted to do that, it would, but I am not going to entertain this with the hope that I can make you do this. Like, you have to want to do this work for yourself. Not because you're in a relationship with me, or because being in a relationship with me, unfortunately, is going to require it, but you have to want to do that for yourself. Maybe at some point we could come back around and meet at a different place, and we would be at a different place, and it could, but it was just, I couldn't, it's different when you're, when you date from that perspective, because it's not this, what can you do for me? What boxes do you check? But it's, what boxes are we willing to just completely disregard and put down? And are you willing to actually be a fully present and self-aware human that we can be okay with triggering each other and working through it? And to this point, a lot of people I have met are not willing to do that. Male or female, not that I don't date women, but like even friendships, like I have a much higher standard for friendships now than I did 5-10 years ago, because if all you want to do is complain about all the things that are wrong in your life and not look at the one common denominator in all of those situations, I just, at some point, our conversations are not going to feel life-giving to me. They are going to feel draining and like work. And I don't want that.
And sometimes, like, other friends, like, talking about friendships, when you evolve, like, 2023, I feel, was like the year of friendships. It just came in, like, just amazing people, amazing women. And I just meet amazing people through the podcast and the events as well, but just like in my local area, like 5 minutes down the road, 10 minutes down the road, I was like, what? These people have been living here all this time. But when you align yourself with a frequency in another area of your life, whether it be friendships, whether it be family, whether it be purpose, and that is a high frequency, it's like you can actually tune into that and say, well, I'm here in this department, so I'm not going to be all the way down here in another department. It's like, I'm going to use this energy and how these people treat me and how these people see me to like up level every other area of my life and the standard that I want for myself, instead of, you know, it doesn't have to be, it could be for some people that their relationships, they feel they're not fulfilled or they're just attracting, but then use the other areas of your life, which you have reached a high frequency, match that energy. How did those people treat you? How do those people see you? And then bring this up. I think that's super important.
Yes. Oh, 1000%. I love the way you say bringing in the energy and the frequency of it as well, because that is so true. That is so true. And I think it's easy to say, to get into the spiral of everything's bad and nothing is good enough. But it's like, no, there are areas of your life that do come easy to you or easily, right? And what is it in those areas that you can apply to the ones that maybe to a certain point have been struggling? And all the time, it comes down to, what are your unconscious beliefs about the area that you are struggling in? What is really happening there?
Yeah. And I also want to just like highlight before we move on about the whole mirroring thing that I shared about what he was mirroring to me and what I was mirroring to him. I think if you find like, I feel like 9 times out of 10, what that person is mirroring to you is the same thing that you're mirroring to them. And you need to find the whole, in this case, it was like, the not feeling good enough, and it will be buried somewhere super deep. It might not even appear that way at all. You know, it could be like, for if someone looked at me and that person from the outside, they would never think we were both thinking that about ourselves. They would never in a million years, just because of how we were showing up, just because of how we show up in our lives. But it's always like, it just blows my mind every single time how much life is a mirror, how much this reality will always give back what you're feeling. And most of the time, you're feeling the same thing as that other person. Like, I think when you dig, it always comes up as the same or very similar thing, 9 times out of 10 with the work that I've done with clients. You know, people always set you up to feel how they feel. In relationships, it's a two-way thing. Even with parenting, it's a two-way thing. Children always want you to feel how they feel. And then parents always, like, on some level, make their kids feel like how they felt. That's just what I'm still doing research on that bit. But especially in relationships, it's like this, the level, it's like that. You, if you want to do inner work, just dive into a relationship.
That is so true.
I think the sane, yeah, I think the sane part is like when you're with your family, you're forced to do inner work, and then you kind of go off into life on your own. And then when you get into another family, it's like you either have to do it then, or you do it prior getting, you know, settled, if that's what you want, like a life partner and kids and all that. But either way.
Yeah. Oh no, I love that. That's so true. So true.
Oh, but let's go back. So we've spoken about, you know, things that seem like trauma, things that seem like they're not trauma, but actually are trauma. So how, and the ways that it does affect our lives, like in terms of feeling guilt, shame, how it shows up in relationships, how it shows up in family, all of that kind of stuff. So what is like a way to really get out of your mind and into your body to just process and release these emotions to kind of get to the other side of all of this?
Mm-hmm. So there are different ways that you can. I obviously talk a lot about using your breath. It is one of the most powerful ways to completely shift your body and shift not just your body, your nervous system from a state of fight or flight to rest and digest. And the intention with it, it's not just to get out of that fight or flight mode, but it is to get yourself to a place mentally and emotionally where you can actually then go even further and look at what is the story that I am telling myself in that moment when I felt activated. What is the story driving my reaction? And how do I unpack and unfold that? I think for a long time for me, it was just, I just came from a perspective of just get out of fight or flight, just get back to rest and digest. But it's like, yeah, but if you really want to do the deeper work, if you really want to see a transformation in what you are attracting and what is being mirrored back to you, you have to go a step further and look at what is the story that I am telling myself in those moments. And why am I responding and reacting in that way? And a lot of times, again, that's just going to show you the wound that is being triggered. And it's being willing to have a trigger and then to do the self-reflection to understand that trigger. That the trigger is really your gift and your opportunity to more deeply understand and love and have compassion for yourself. But so often, I think a lot of times when people talk about nervous system regulation, it's just, how do I fix that feeling? How do I get out of that feeling and avoid it? And I'm coming from somebody who operated that way for a long time. And it's doing the deeper work beyond just getting out of the fight or flight. Now, if we want to talk about getting out of the fight or flight, two things I love. There's one called box breathing and one called 4-7-8. Again, I'm giving these with the caveat that I do not want you to just stop at doing some breathing and getting to that rest and digest. I want you to go further. But if you are feeling very, very activated, those are two breathing techniques that you can do that are going to get you out of that experience of fight or flight within 3 to 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now, I can go into it, but I don't want to take too much time on those. But I wanted to really hit home that I want you to go beyond just getting out of the activated state and going into understanding it.
No, I love that. Thank you for sharing that, because then it's also about having practices that, you know, don't wait until you're in that state to then be like, how do I get out and then use techniques? Actually, these techniques work better when you just have a lifestyle of being able to just get out ahead of it, whether it be yoga, mindfulness, creativity, just having things that already just make you feel settled. So when you come across these situations, which none of us can escape because we are having an earth experience, life is life. The whole goal is not to never feel a trigger again. Like, if that's your goal, then you need to leave the planet now because it's not going to happen. It's to be able to work through quicker and quicker, or go deeper and deeper. It's not always about speed. It's like, you know, these things that, like, sitting with this and these opportunities, like how you put it, Rosanna, like these are opportunities to actually go deeper within yourself, within the life experience, within relationships, love, compassion with the other person, and also work through them, get to the other side, become more of who you are. That is the goal. And Rosanna, I know you have like a really nice gift for our audience, which is a guided meditation to actually move stuck emotions. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So I actually created this because I had a client, a breathwork client, come to me for one of our check-in sessions. And she said, listen, did the breathwork session. It was great. She goes, but I am still so sad. Like, I just have these waves of sadness that keep coming up and I don't know how to move through it. Like, I just... what do I have to do, an hour and a half breathwork session every time? He said, no. I said, I will create something for you. And essentially what it is it's something, it's a very short session. It's, I think, 3 to 5 minutes. It's very short. But the idea was, and I told her, I said, it's not just about getting you to stop feeling sad. It's to get you to a point where you can understand what the sadness is about. And so I went through a process basically using the breath to come out of that state, but then to also connect to where she was feeling that sadness in her body. And then understanding the story that that emotion and those sensations are telling you and bringing up for you. And here's the thing, I did it because of her, you know, stuck sadness, but it's really something that can be used for any emotion that you feel. You just, like, you might have a week where you're like, every day, why am I so frustrated and so on edge over and over and over? And it's, you can keep doing that, what you've been doing, or you can take 5 minutes to just be guided through the process of connecting to it, feeling it in your body, and understanding what's really coming up and what's really driving that. So that is what this gift is hopefully going to help everybody do with any emotion.
That's such an amazing gift. Thank you so much. And I'm definitely going to utilize that gift when that happens again. And I say when, not if.
Right, exactly. I love, can I just say, I love that you said, if you want to go through this life not getting triggered, you're not here to live. And it's so, I literally just created something about this earlier. It's, you know, everybody wants the secret to never being triggered again. And it's like, that is not life. Because what people don't acknowledge is that we have positive triggers too. That same joy and love and like excitement that you feel when you accomplish something, well, that was a trigger. The only difference is you had a bunch of positive emotions and positive stories associated with that. So if you want to go through life and not be triggered, then you want to go through a life completely devoid of any emotions, positive or negative. And why would we want that? Nobody really wants that. But I just had to, I love that you said that and acknowledged that. I wanted to come back and say that again and just, yes, please, do not expect to go through this life without getting triggered. It is also a beautiful, beautiful experience.
Thank you for highlighting that. This has been such a great conversation. And what is next for you? What's next for you? Like, what are you even, like, personally, professionally, just in terms of what you're putting out into the world in 2024?
So it's so funny you ask, because I've been reevaluating what I'm doing. Obviously, I love guiding people through one-on-one sessions, but I really am this year just committed to just creating content that mm-hmm. is easily accessible and readily available for people to have these moments, to create these moments, 5-10 minutes where you can come back and allow, just facilitate you doing the work for yourself. That is what I am committed to in this year. And then also elevating people's stories and their journeys just as inspiration, because I think it can be so easy to get into our heads, and it helps so much to see, wow, somebody else went through this. Somebody else did this work, and this is what's on the other side of it. So that is what this year is dedicated to.
Amazing. And I love that. That's all, you know, when I see people doing that, I just think, yes, this is what we need. Because when we see ourselves in others, or when we hear our stories or our internal dialogue in others, then it really makes way for healing and freedom just in that moment. Like, sometimes you don't have to do, like, you know, healing is everywhere. It's not always you have to do a process. It's just by intention and aligning with the people, sources that give you that way, that route. Rosanna, thank you so much for being with us here today. And I really wish you so much love and success and luck in your endeavors going forward.
Oh, thank you so much. Likewise. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being here with us. Your presence here is a gift. To ensure you're always in tune with our latest explorations, subscribe to the Soul Goddess podcast so you're always notified of a new episode. Before we part ways for now, an exciting reminder to claim your free gifts waiting for you in the show notes. These are available for a limited time, and they're crafted with love and intention just for you. Be wild, be free, and forever remain true to your authentic soul self. Until we meet again, sending you so much love and light.